Whole Hog Sports presents the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, the premier Arkansas hoops podcast, brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. With Whole Hog Sports basketball analyst Scotty Bordelon, here's your host, Matt Jones.
What a difference a week makes. Last Wednesday morning, Arkansas was 0-3 in SEC play. This week, on a three-game winning streak, they've won lopsided games over Missouri and South Carolina, and won an impressive road game at LSU, ranked number 12 at the time, over the weekend. Up next for the Razorbacks is a home game Saturday night against Texas A&M, a chance to get some revenge for a loss to the Aggies a couple of weeks ago in College Station. We'll get into all of that today. Matt Jones with Scotty Bordelon and Andrew Joseph of Whole Hog Sports, and the newly named 2021 Arkansas Sports Writer of the Year, Bob Holt of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Bob's now a four-time winner of that award. Only four sports writers have won it more times than he has, so congratulations on that, Bob. Three was the number of the night Tuesday when the Razorbacks beat South Carolina 75-59 at Bud Walton Arena. As we mentioned, Arkansas now on a three-game winning streak. The Razorbacks also failed to make a three-point basket against the Gamecocks. That snapped a 33-year streak of games that the Razorbacks had made a three-point shot, and that was the third longest in college basketball behind Duke and UNLV. Let's start with the winning streak, Scotty. It kind of feels like a video game. You know, when it's not going your way, you just hit reset and you try again. It kind of feels like that's what the Razorbacks have done. They've hit reset, lost three straight, but now they've won three straight. And over the next couple of weeks, it feels like a good chance for them to rack up some wins.
Yeah, I kind of thought that was the case too, that, you know, Arkansas' schedule laid out where, you know, you looked at it and you thought that maybe Arkansas could get its conference season back on track, just looking at the opponents that were coming up. But you were still a little bit hesitant about that, you know, potentially happening, just because Arkansas, you know, it looked like had some real issues, especially turnovers, you know, in the games that they had lost. I think they'd given up, you know, over 80 points in most of those. But defensively, I think they found their identity. They have plugged in players who are going to give great effort and defensive energy on a nightly basis. And in the three consecutive wins, they haven't given up 60 points in any of those games. You know, I think there's still some hesitation about whether this Arkansas team is legitimately back on track, just because a couple of the teams that they've beaten, not real great. And LSU was missing its starting point guard, but still to go in to LSU last weekend, win on the road against a, you know, top 15 team without your head coach, without a forward who made a big difference in the previous game, it's pretty impressive. And I think you're seeing a lot of guys step up on the defensive end. And if Arkansas wasn't JD Notae and Jalen Williams' team before Tuesday night, it definitely is now. Those two guys are the engines that make this team go. And, you know, you kind of got some complementary pieces that are you know, making big time contributions on both ends.
Scotty mentioned Eric Musselman was not with the Razorbacks during the game against LSU. Keith Smart served as the interim head coach for that game. He was going to serve as the interim coach for the game against South Carolina on Tuesday night. And then, Bob, about an hour or so before tip off, we kind of got wind that Musselman was in the building and he was going to be coaching. And lo and behold, they made that announcement about 25 minutes before tip off. And what kind of impact do you think it made having him back on the sideline?
Well, yeah, it was a surprise. He was supposed to or expected to miss two games. I always qualify that from their press release. But, yeah, I think it probably gave the players a good lift, you know. And he'd been at practice, like Jalen Williams said last night, that they expected him there because he'd been at practice. You know, and he was on his radio show Monday night. Keith Smart, you know, filled in for Eric, but Eric called in and was on for a few minutes. I remember thinking, he might coach the team tomorrow, you know. And but he was talking about, you know, how he had to get IV fluid Saturday because he got sick when he stopped taking the pain medication, or maybe it was the pain medication that made him sick. I'm not sure. And he talked about being exhausted. And I remember thinking, boy, you know, I hope he can get through this. But he did a good job. If people were able to notice when the teams were on the other end of the court, like in front of the South Carolina bench, Eric would be possible, you know, would kind of be in front of the bench doing things. When they came down to the other end, the Arkansas bench, he was a few feet back and was kind of protected by the scorer's table. I know that was the doctor said, you know, he could coach, but he had to be careful and, not put himself in harm's way, so to speak. If, like a player came over there diving for a ball or something, he had a little bit of protection. But, watching him, he had the sling on. Of course, they couldn't raise his hands up and exhort the crowd. But, he was in the huddle, obviously from where we sit, we can't see what he's drawn up, but he was in the huddle leading the team. And, he was talking with the refs, and he looked like he was coaching just like normal. And, I think it was, a pleasant surprise for the players, and probably, gave the crowd a lift and they got excited. And I guess as painful as that shoulder is, it's even more painful for not to be at the games coaching.
I noticed a few times when the ball was on the Arkansas or in front of the Arkansas bench, like you mentioned, Gus Arginal, the assistant coach, was kind of in a crouched position down two seats away from Usman. And I almost wonder if he was there ready to, step in if a loose ball or something had come to the bench. I don't know. Musselman was talking to Chuck Barrett before the game on the RSN pregame show, and he said, I might only make it 10 minutes. He said, I might be way too exhausted. We're just going to have to see how this goes. And I thought they did a good job. They made it work last night, and they beat a South Carolina team. And that was – South Carolina is not a very good team this year. They fell to, 10-7 overall, 1-4 in SEC play. We talk about every game has its own identity. They responded real well to what the identity of the game had kind of become in the first half. And Andrew, in the second half, it looked like a completely different Arkansas team. They outscored South Carolina by 23 in the second half. Their shot selection got a lot better. We're going to talk more about that in a minute when we talk about this 3-point streak that came to an end. But they looked like a completely different team after halftime.
Yeah, I mean, at halftime, they were down 7, but they were still winning the rebounding battle, the turnover battle, and they had made 15 of 17, I believe, at the line. And so it was just kind of one of those where, they were playing well enough to win, but they were still losing. And then the second half, maybe it was probably some of the best basketball they've played all year, especially when they went on that 13-0 run to when they were down 41-38, and then they went on a 13-0 run to take the lead. And I think that was probably the best we've seen them play to date.
Yeah, it was an 18-1 run, Scotty, at halftime. And I think I counted South Carolina missed its first, 12 shots of the second half, and they committed 6 turnovers before they finally made a basket about 9 minutes into the half.
Yeah, it was a really good defensive stretch from Arkansas. And that, that first 6 minutes of the second half when Arkansas, I think, took a 51-41 lead, they had just capped off an 18-1 run. South Carolina calls timeout. We just really saw the value of JD Notae and Jalen Williams. They came in, they both sat. I think Jalen sat close to the last 12 minutes of the first half. JD was close to the final 8. And you just kind of saw Arkansas really struggle to get anything going offensively. Your anchor on the defensive end in the front court is out. He's still leading from the sideline, but it's different than having him, calling out what he's seeing on the floor, being a rim protector. Pass deflector, that kind of thing. And then JD is, as erratic and, as erratic as he can be sometimes. He's, I thought at the end of the LSU game, he was a real calming presence for them. Like, you felt comfortable with the ball in his hands because he's the guy that can create not only for himself, maybe better than anybody else in this league, but for others too. I think that's a really undervalued part of his game. He finished last night with 5 assists, and Jalen and JD, they assisted on 4 of Arkansas's first 5 buckets of the second half. And, they were really terrific. I think Jalen's possibly making his star turn a little bit. We didn't think that he could, or I didn't at least think that he could follow up what he did at LSU on Saturday. He just impacted every aspect of the game. And then, in some ways against South Carolina, he was even better. And it's really coming at a perfect time for Arkansas. I really just think you see the value of those two guys on the floor. I think they both finished plus 20 between them and the plus minus. And that's just kind of speaks to, how good those guys are and how valuable they are.
There were Arkansas's leading scorers last night. Williams had 19 points. Notae had 17. But like you mentioned, it's not just scoring. It's the assists. It's the rebounding that Williams provides. JD Notae blocked 3 shots against South Carolina. Arkansas did I don't know that I've seen Arkansas under Musselman deflect more perimeter shots, you know, shots from about 17 feet out, as it did against South Carolina last night. There must have been 5-6 of those types. And I think they, you know, I think the ability to block those shots also disrupted some other South Carolina shots. They had a lot of air balls last night. I think maybe they were trying to compensate for some of that length in front of them. You know, Bob Notte really looks like a different player to me since he came back from whatever kept him out against Mississippi State. We talked about this a little bit last week, but these last four games for him, including, you know, some games, or I guess five games, including a couple of games they've lost, he looks really good, like the JD Notte that we expected, maybe not the one that we were getting in some of their games in December.
Yeah, and after JD came back, Eric on one of our Zooms then did mention COVID with keeping JD out. So he did confirm that, even though at the time it was an illness, which I think we all knew what that was. But yeah, you know, JD has proven he can impact the game in other ways in scoring. Obviously, you know, 17 points is big, but I think he had 7 boards last night and several assists. And, you know, just like when they beat Missouri, and I don't know if beat's a strong enough word, walloped them, whatever you want to call it. You know, I give him a lot of credit. Very first two baskets, you know, assist by JD, got Jalen Williams going, got Kamani Johnson going before Kamani hurt his ankle. And then last night, like Scotty alluded to, you know, JD and Jalen too, both got the offense going more with their passing than their scoring. Obviously they scored well too, but yeah, JD's just the guy that can, you know, if he's having a bad shooting night, you know, he can win with his defense. Like I say, I think he had one steal, which he's known for the steals. He's averaging nearly 3 a game, but 3 block shots, which I didn't realize he'd done that, I think, 4 other times, but that was his first time doing it against like a major college team. You know, the other ones had been against maybe lesser teams. And yeah, he can just impact the game in a lot of different ways. And obviously, you know, opponents have to account for him offensively, which opens the way up for other guys. I don't know if they would have won at Mississippi State with him, but obviously that impacted them. And since he's come back, he scored really well and just, you know, played pretty well on the floor. And you know, he got 4 fouls the last 2 games. I know the coaches don't like that, but to his credit, he played those last 9 minutes, I think it was, at LSU, and was, you know, very instrumental in that win when they came back. And then, you know, last night, obviously being able to stay in the game in the second half as much as he did, you know, that was big. So yeah, he just, I think he just gives everybody else confidence too. I mean, I think they know he's their best player, although, you know, Jalen's probably challenging for that with what he's doing, but you know, JD's a senior. He's been in the program now for 3 seasons, including his redshirt year. So he's, you know, the most experienced guy along with Connor Vanover, but obviously JD's playing a lot more minutes than Connor. And so I just think he's really important to that team in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I completely agree with you guys about JD and Jalen. Musselman has been talking all season long about this team is searching for a leader to step up. And I think during this winning streak that those guys are the two unquestioned leaders on this team and will be going forward. And Jalen, I think his stretch in this winning streak has just been incredible. He didn't have a double-double in his first 40-plus games of his career. And then these last, he was 1 rebound shy of his 4th consecutive double-double in the last 4 games. So, for him to establish himself as a premier big in the SEC is not only huge for himself, but for this team that really doesn't have another guy like him that can match up with some of the bigger guys in the conference.
I think it would be criminal if Arkansas didn't go back over the game film and try to find Jalen another rebound to extend that double-double streak. I think the Philadelphia 76ers did that a couple weeks ago when Danny Green, I think he played like 20-plus minutes and didn't record a single stat, but they went back the next day and rewatched and found like this ghost steal that they credited him with, which is pretty funny. But I think the last 2 games, just continuing on JD, I'm really high on him. Like, I think he's arguably one of the top 5 players in the league, in a league that's got a lot of really good guys and a lot of guys that can create an impact both ends of the floor really well. But the last 2 games, I think we saw just how crippling JD's dribble penetration can be on a defense. Like, he's so good at just getting into the middle of the floor and either, you know, rising up for that little short floater from the SEC logo, maybe getting all the way to the rim, or kind of like what we saw when, you know, Arkansas started its comeback when they were down 8 at LSU. He got to the SEC logo, kicked out to Devo for a 3 on the left wing. Like, that's the stuff that a lot of people maybe don't give JD enough credit for is just he will pass the ball. And I think against Vanderbilt a few games ago, he had 17 potential assists. So he's looking for his teammates too, and he's pushing for that, you know, league scoring lead too. So I mean, he's doing a little bit of everything, and I think he's just been really terrific.
Speaking of missing stats, I thought Adis Tony might have gotten shorted a rebound last night. He ends up with 13 points and 8 rebounds, really near a double-double for him. One of the better games that we've seen him play over the last couple of months. Stanley Amude finished with, I thought, kind of a quiet 12 points, but certainly a big 12 points in that game. One other thought on Jalen Williams is that I think in the first 6 minutes of the game, he drew 5 fouls against South Carolina, 4 on the offensive end, and he also drew a charge. Scotty, you'd know this better than I do, but I think he might have a charge drawn in every SEC game played this year, or most of them for sure. He's been really good in that regard. I think, what did he have, 4 against LSU down in Baton Rouge on Saturday? So he's been really good at drawing charges. All right, let's talk about the 3-point streak. That's what everybody's talking about today. And kind of interesting to me that this has drawn so much attention. 1,092 games, Arkansas had made a 3-point basket dating to January 7th of 1989. That was previously the last time that they didn't make a 3-pointer. In that game at Texas, Lee Mayberry and Cannon Whitby attempted 1 3-pointer apiece. That's it. That tells you a little bit about what the game was like in that day and age. I don't know that I would ever predict Arkansas not to make a 3-point shot, especially when they were playing in their home gym. But I think if you look in retrospect, maybe last night made a little bit of sense. I mean, you've got a Frank Martin coach team defensively. Those guys are always really hard-nosed. And then you just got an Arkansas team that, we sound like a broken record, they do not shoot the 3-point shot well this year. You go back through their 5 games prior to last night, they were 8 of 27 against Mississippi State, 6 of 22 against Vanderbilt, 6 of 19 against A&M, 4 of 19 against Missouri, 5 of 17 against LSU. But in that LSU game, they didn't make a 3-pointer in the first half. They were 0 for 8 at halftime in the last 2 games. They're 0 for 15 in the first half on their 3-point attempts. They're shooting 25% in SEC play from beyond the arc, just a little bit shy of 29% on the season. Shot selection, I thought, was really good in the second half last night. The 3-pointer was not falling. And they did as good of a job as I've seen of getting to the rim or settling for mid-range jump shots. It reminded me of a Jimmy Witt game a couple of years ago where, you know, everybody talked about he's the mid-range king. Arkansas did a really good job of shot selection. And I think that's why they didn't, you know, hit a 3 last night. I think that, you know, they could have taken a couple of bad 3-point attempts and maybe one of them falls. What really stands out to me is that they only took 11 3-pointers, and that's quite a bit under their season average. And I think it's because their shot selection was really good in the second half.
You know, I give them credit for playing the game the right way. I think JD took the last 3 with a little under 5 minutes to play. And of course, I guess to show you what a life the streak took on, the fans knew they hadn't hit a 3 and they knew they had a long streak going. And probably the last, I don't know, 7-8 possessions, Arkansas was comfortably ahead. And but still had their starters in because they're trying to close the game out and they're trying to work the clock. And you could hear fans yelling, 3-3, like take a 3. And the Razorbacks could have hoisted some up. You know, you had some 3-point shoot. Like you said, they're not a good 3-point shooting team, but obviously JD takes 3s and Devo, and heck, Jalen hit the big 3. That was one thing about LSU. They didn't shoot the 3 well, but man, late in the game when they needed some, you know, JD hit a couple and Jalen hit one. And but, you know, we asked, you know, Eric and we got JD and Jalen after the game for interviews and, you know, just to summarize, kind of paraphrase, they're basically saying, hey, we were driving the ball. We were getting to the line. They hit 27 to 33 free throws. So the game plan was to attack the basket. That's what was working. So why jack up 3? So I'll give him credit for playing the game the right way and not sort of, you know, jacking up some 3s just to try to keep the streak going, you know, although it obviously for the program, the fans, it would have been great if the streak was going, but, you know, all good things come to an end eventually.
I was still working in the Bud Walton media room last night and trying to put together my sidebar on Jalen, and Matt Zimmerman sent me a text. I thought he put the Arkansas 3-point streak in pretty cool perspective. I'm going to read that text. He said, I prefer to think of all the great threes we made during those 33 years. So many great players hit those, like Ty Day and Lee Mayberry and Scotty Thurman and Clint McDaniel and Alex Dillard and Pat Bradley and Joe Johnson and Bobby Portis and Moses Moody and somewhat lesser remembered ones like Keiko Hadar and Cannon Whitby and Guy Whitney and Anthony Bell and Kai Madden and Charles Tatum and Blake Edens and Jonathan Holmes. What a beautiful streak it was. I mean, Z's got really cool perspective on that. And he also said, my friend Terry Prentice, who's now a deputy AD at Arkansas, was born on January 7th, 1989. And that's the last time Arkansas didn't make a three. It goes beyond when I was, it goes back before I was born. I didn't think I'd, you know, really, I never thought that Arkansas's three-point streak would ever, you know, come into question. But I think Bob kind of hit the nail on the head, and Matt too. Like, their shot selection in the second half, you know, was really good. And I thought they didn't have to take threes because their off-ball activity and movement was so good. Audis Tony, Trey Wade, Devo Davis moved away from the basketball really, really well and all got layups. And, you know, even on some missed shots, even some missed threes, like Audis Tony's there for an offensive rebound and a putback immediately. And so they, you know, you score without hitting a three. And I also thought Arkansas got out and ran in transition. They were pretty opportunistic there too. So pretty effective ways to score, you know, when your shot beyond the arc's not dropping.
The Basketball Podcast of Mid-America is brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. Visit their location at 411 South Metro Parkway in Rogers or online at LandersToyotaNWA.com.
For all your automotive needs, shop Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers, where we guarantee you the best buying experience and best service after the sale in Arkansas. Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Mentioned Arkansas is 3-3 in the SEC. A&M comes to Bud Walton Arena on Saturday night. That's a 7:30 tip-off, and the game will be on SEC Network. The Aggies have only lost two games this season. They're kind of like Arkansas. Their schedule is backloaded, where they play the, you know, the better teams on their schedule later in the season. And so don't know that I'm really buying A&M as a two-loss team right now. They have two losses. I just don't know that it's your typical two-loss team at this point in the season. I saw where they did get a few votes in the AP poll this week. Speaking of the AP poll, LSU fell one spot to number 13 after their loss to Arkansas last Saturday, 65-58 at the PMAC in Baton Rouge. The Razorbacks trailed that game by 8 points with 9 minutes left and then closed the game on a 17-2 run. It was the first time this season that LSU has lost at home, and their only other loss this year was to Auburn, who's number two in the AP poll this week. Scotty, that was – I don't know that there's another game that compares to it in terms of the best all-around performance that Arkansas's had this season. Offensively, it wasn't pretty. LSU will do that to you. They're a really good defensive team. But, man, I thought Arkansas just answered the bell so many times down there, and to do it without Kamani Johnson, who was on the sideline, to do it without Eric Musselman, who was back in Fayetteville, a really impressive win.
Yeah, no question. And I didn't know what to expect whatsoever from Arkansas going into that game. You know, Eric's out. You know, Keith Smart stepping up. I didn't really have any questions about Keith Smart stepping into the interim head coach position. I mean, the guy, if you've listened to any of his press conferences, you know that the guy's a pro. And that was really evidenced, I thought, by, you know, he calls a timeout with about 9 minutes left and Arkansas is down 8. And, you know, the PMAC is probably as alive as it's been all day. You know, they're probably, the fans are feeling, the players are feeling, the coaching staff is feeling for LSU that, you know, they've got Arkansas on the ropes. And, you know, if we hit them with, you know, another punch, then they're going to be down for the count. But Keith Smart just sat the guys down and was like, listen, you guys just need to breathe because you need clarity in your mind right now. You've got to forget about, you know, what has happened that's gotten you down 8 points. And, you know, it didn't, that message didn't really seem like it was working, you know, immediately, because I think Arkansas inbounded the ball after that timeout and got a 10-second violation, couldn't get the ball across half court. But defensively, I think they really flushed, you know, what led to that run for LSU. JD and Jalen just, again, I just keep going back to them. They just had their fingerprints all over that game, especially the closing, you know, stretch run for Arkansas there too. But I, you know, I mentioned Arkansas's complimentary pieces around those two guys. I need to give a shout out to Stanley Amude for the way that he has defended in SEC play. He went into that South Carolina game last night. Opponents were 7 of 34 from the floor shooting against him. I'm at about the 12 minute mark of the rewatch of the South Carolina game, and he's given up one bucket on 7 shots. So the guy is playing just absolutely lights out. Like, anytime you're holding your matchup to around 20% from the floor, it's pretty incredible. Like, Moses Moody was doing some similar things last night. And Audis Tony, I mean, we just get back to anytime he's, you know, playing really active and being productive, we always go back to his run in Kansas City and what he was doing earlier in the year. You know, he had a double-double in his debut here. He's been really good. I think those two guys are just such important role players. And they're impacting a lot of different areas on the floor, and they're really contributing to, you know, Arkansas's uptick in, you know, defensive effort, intensity, and they're a really big reason why Arkansas's, you know, playing its best defensive ball of the year.
Yeah, going into that game against LSU, all the talk was about LSU swarming defense and how great they were on the defensive end. But I thought it was Arkansas that really showed out defensively and showed major improvement from what they had earlier in the season. To hold the number 12 ranked team in the country to, I think it was 2 points in the last 9 minutes of the game. I mean, they can do that consistently. They're going to win a lot more ball games.
Bob, I was really impressed with Jalen Williams' play against LSU. I think he finished with 11 points and 13 rebounds, but there was a stretch right after LSU had gone ahead 56-48. On 3 of the next 4 possessions, Jalen got 2 steals and he drew a charge. And I thought those were really game-changing plays.
Yeah, he just does a lot of things that, you know, they probably need to create a taking charges stat in their box score for Jalen. It just maybe like assist should have been for those guys. Yeah, Jalen just, you know, early in the year, he was passing so well. You know, he was getting out there kind of as a point forward. They'd been struggling to get assists. They're doing better with that now. You know, JD's got a lot of assists. Devo's got a lot of assists, but you know, now Jalen's gotten more aggressive, looking for a shot more. There were times, I'm sure, people watching would say, take that shot, you know, but now he is taking that shot, you know, and he's taking charges and he's getting rebounds, and he's just making game-winning plays, some that show up in the box score, like points and rebounds, some that don't, like taking those charges or just, you know, making a good pass. Maybe it's not an assist, but it's the pass that leads to the assist. You know, and there's maybe a few times he's tried to thread the needle a little too finely, maybe like Brett Favre threw a few interceptions, but he seems to have, you know, gotten back on track with these. He's got a really good assist to turnover ratio, especially for a big man. You look at stats for big men, they're going to have more turnovers than assists, not like a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio like Jalen does. That's very rare, I think, in college basketball at a high level. So he's just doing a lot of things on both ends of the floor, kind of like JD, but he's doing it from a big man standpoint. JD's doing it from a guard standpoint.
The only thing I can add to that is I thought, you know, when Jalen came up with that defensive rebound and tossed the ball, he's falling out of bounds opposite of the LSU bench, and he tosses the ball off of Alex Fudge's hip. I mean, that's just, you can't teach that. That's uncoachable basketball IQ. And if Arkansas – I think Arkansas is playing with better basketball IQ lately. And I think last night's game in terms of shot selection, you know, kind of speaks to that. But that was one of the most impressive impromptu basketball IQ moments that I've seen from an Arkansas player in a really, really long time. So props to Jalen for that. That's just the kind of player he is. And I think he's been that way since, you know, his days at Northside.
That's another stat Arkansas needs to have the box score, falling out of bounds, knocking the ball off an opposing player. They need to add that and taking charges to their box score.
So Arkansas lost its first three conference games. They've won three straight. We talked about after they had lost to Vanderbilt, a really bad loss. Can they be a 500 team in SEC this year? Well, in order to do that, you got to go steal one somewhere, and they stole it at LSU. So now, you know, you're at 3-3. Really, it's about how you do over your next 12 conference games. They've got the West Virginia non-conference game thrown in there as well. But let's just look up over the next couple of weeks at their schedule. Mentioned A&M at home on Saturday night. They go to Ole Miss next Wednesday. Ole Miss just lost by 25 to Missouri at home. And if Arkansas beating Missouri by 44 last week was the most surprising score in the SEC, I think Missouri over Ole Miss by 25 at Oxford has to be right up there with it. West Virginia comes into Bud Walton next weekend, week from Saturday. West Virginia 13-4 this year. They've lost a couple of straight to Kansas, lost real bad at Fog Allen over the weekend, lost last night to Baylor. And then the Razorbacks go to Georgia, a team that really kind of feels like they're in season on the brink territory now with Tom Crean and his future in Athens. What do you think about these next four games, Scotty, and how this shapes up for Arkansas before a couple of back-to-back home games against Mississippi State and Auburn in early February?
I think their next, you know, five games, you know, four of those are in league play. You got A&M at home. That's very winnable. Mississippi on the road, that's winnable. If, you know, Missouri's doing it, then Arkansas's obviously got a pretty good shot. And then your next league game is at Georgia. It's probably one of the – they might be the worst team in the SEC by far. And then you've got Mississippi State on your home floor. And then that's kind of, I think this next five games, you know, you can throw the West Virginia game in there. That's going to be a really good test that kind of sandwich those four league games. I think it's a really good primer for this Arkansas team before its league schedule gets really, really tough. I mean, because after that, you've got Auburn, Alabama, back-to-back. You play Missouri on the road. I mean, no matter what you think about Missouri, it's kind of hard to play there. I mean, you can just ask Alabama that. And then you've got Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky, LSU, Tennessee to finish out. You've got to like really get glued together over this next five games, because I think your mettle's really going to get tested once February starts.
Bob, you feel like they can hit 500? Do you feel like the LSU game changes your thoughts on the rest of their season?
Yeah, like you said, you lose one at home to Vanderbilt or whoever, and if you need to steal one on the road, which they did that at LSU of all places. And I think there are some more winnable road games coming up. That doesn't mean they're going to do it. Obviously, they have to focus on A&M. And, you know, these are, quote, revenge games against A&M and Mississippi State, who, you know, Arkansas lost to them on the road. And, you know, there's no disgrace in losing those teams on the road. They're both having good seasons. You know, Alabama just lost to Mississippi State. And A&M's always been a tough place for Arkansas to win. Not from the Southwest Conference days so much, but since they got back and since they both got since A&M joined the SEC, you know, Mike Anderson had, I don't think he ever won there when he was at Missouri. Of course, those were the Billy Gillespie teams that were really good for the most part. But you know, all these games have been sold out since before the season, and they've had some good crowds. You know, on the box, they put the 19-2 or whatever it is because it's a sellout. We don't exactly know what the crowds are. I'd say they're like, I don't know, maybe last night, maybe there was 12,000 or something. I'm not sure. Might be wrong about that. But I think Saturday night, for the first time, they might have a near-capacity crowd because it's Saturday night. Unfortunately, it's going against the Packers game, so you can't blame Packers fans for not showing up. I wish they'd move the game one or the other to a day, but you know, it's A&M, an old traditional rival. A&M beat them already. A&M's got to play Kentucky tonight at home. If they win that game, I mean, man, but even if they lose it, they're still having a really good year. You know, the Razorbacks are playing well. There's really no excuse for the fans not to show up in big numbers. You know, it's Saturday night. It's a good opponent. Arkansas is playing well. So I think for the first time, we're going to see kind of an old, you know, timey Bud Walton Arena crowd. And I think that that'll really boost Arkansas. And I think, you know, these other games coming up at home, they've got a good home stretch. I think the crowds are going to get, you know, bigger and better. Although the fans that have been there have really been good because they're hardcore fans to be showing up for some of these games. And when they're all on TV or maybe not at convenient times, and maybe the Razorbacks weren't playing as well as they are now. But yeah, I think it's going to be a really good atmosphere Saturday night.
The audacity of Arkansas to put a basketball game against the Packers. Bob, maybe we can get you an outdoor Razorback game at Lambeau in a future year to make up for this.
Bob was lobbying for a different start time with Arkansas's SID last night. I just don't think it really resonated with him.
I'm going to try to reach out to Greg Sankey, see what we can work out. Or maybe I'll reach out to the NFL, see if they can move the Packer 49ers game to a day game. I mean, really, who wants to play a night game at Lambeau? It's so cold. I know they do it for TV rankings, but I really, seriously, they should think of the fans, think of the players. They don't need to be playing these cold weather games at night. I really don't think it's fair to the players and the fans that are there.
Mentioned A&M, by the way. They're 15-2. They're going to play Kentucky on Wednesday night, so it'll be interesting to see if they've still got that winning streak intact when they come to Bud Walton. That game is in College Station. A&M is 10-0 this season at home, and they've won 8 straight games overall going into their game against Kentucky. Arkansas and the Aggies will play at 7:30 on Saturday night at Bud Walton Arena. Make sure to come to WholeHogSports.com before, during, and after the game for all of our coverage. Also, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. You can find it on Apple or Spotify if you search Whole Hog Radio. That's 3 words, WHOLEHOGRADIO, Whole Hog Radio. Make sure to leave us a review. It'll help others find our podcast. For Bob Holt and Scotty Bordelon and Andrew Joseph, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, and we'll see you again next week.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.